We've been led in this prayer period by Mrs. Roger Duck of Latin America, Barranquilla, Colombia, missionary homemaker at home on her first furlough with her husband and their three children. As she told you, her husband is a field missionary and chaplain in that wonderful hospital there. Now then, the time has come for some business, and we recognize Miss Alma Hunt.
On yesterday afternoon, the executive board reports were distributed to those who were here. Madam President, I move that the printed report of the WMU Executive Board be adopted without reading.
All right, the motion is that the printed report of the WMU Executive Board be adopted without reading. And a second. Is there discussion? If not, those favoring the motion will say aye. Those opposed, no, and the motion carries. Is there further business and announcement, Ms. Hunt?
Some announcements. Yesterday morning, you heard the nominating committee for 1966 called for organization. That committee met and organized as follows: the chairman, Mrs. C.J. Humphrey of Texas, co-chairman, Mrs. Carl Matthews of Colorado, the secretary, Mrs. J.H. Simpson, Jr. of Ohio. There is an urgent message, telephone message, for Mr. John Gimenez, G-I-M-I-N-E-Z. If he is in the room, will he please go to the information desk in the main foyer and pick up the telephone message. Also in the main foyer, there is the bulletin board that we told you about yesterday and the information desk on which you can find telegrams and other notices. There is a post office in this building on the third level. I think this is the second level. It is open from 8 until 4, so at the noon hour or after the afternoon session, you may check by there. We are told that there are some letters there. This afternoon, our session is to begin at 1:15, as it was announced yesterday, and please make note of this, for the program calls for the session to begin at 1:30. We are moving it up 15 minutes in order that we may conclude our afternoon session at 3 o'clock, move out of this auditorium immediately so that this whole stage property may be removed before the opening of the convention at 6:45. So it is necessary that we open the session at 1:15 in order to allow time for the demolition of this platform. You are reminded again that you may have lunch in the building. I announced yesterday, prepared by the president's barbecue, but he has something besides barbecue. Lunch can be served to 1,500 at one time in the area of this auditorium under the theater. If you'll go down one ramp from here, you'll come to the exhibit area. It's on that level, and if you'll just look for signs that say theater, you will come to this lunch room. Yesterday, we had some to complain about the fact that the house is in darkness during a part of the program and asked that the lights be left on so that you could take notes. We had to make a choice. We either have to have the visuals in a darkened room or we have to allow you to take notes. And the program has been prepared and planned to use the visuals. Let me say to those of you who are concerned that your notes aren't what you wanted them to be, that many of the speeches which have been delivered here were submitted in advance and are printed. They will be in a combination folder of speeches from this meeting and from the pastor's conference, and will go on sale this afternoon in the box office area. The box office is at the Ackard Street entrance. If you'll just turn around, face the direction which I'm facing, walk straight, you'll come eventually to the box office area. And there's a sign there, speeches for sale. And so after 3 o'clock, you can dash out there and be among the first to buy the speeches. Many of us are mindful of the fact that 1 year ago, as we came together for our Tuesday morning session, we were looking forward to the address to be delivered by Mrs. William McMurray as the president of the North American Baptist Women's Union. You have read the tributes to Mrs. McMurray in our magazines. And in the minutes of this meeting, we will have a tribute so that it may go down in the official record of Women's Missionary Union. For surely everyone here recognizes the tremendous contribution Mrs. McMurray made during the years she was a pastor's wife, and she wrote programs for The Window. She wrote mission study helps for Royal Service. And then from the years 1951 until her retirement in 62, you are acutely aware, I'm sure, of her tremendous contribution then, and will never forget her contribution after retirement in writing for us the magnificent book, Spiritual Life Development, and in delivering that wonderful message a year ago this morning. You will be delighted to know, I'm sure, that her contribution to Baptist life is being recognized not only by Women's Missionary Union and the Women's Department of the Baptist World Alliance, it has been recognized by the Alliance itself, on which she served as a member of the executive. And in the February meeting of the Executive Committee of the Southern Baptist Convention, Dr. Porter Ruth himself rose and made a motion that the convention prepare a resolution to be spread upon the minutes of the Southern Baptist Convention in appreciation for Mrs. William McMurray. And I think you will hear that resolution, or at least you will vote on that recommendation as you come to hear the report of the Executive Committee of the Southern Baptist Convention on tomorrow morning.
I cannot tell you with what anticipation we have come to this hour to consider foreign missions for a new age. For surely these are exciting days for us. Really, these days are days of exploring new ideas, expanding new concerns and concepts, exploding perhaps some of our old ideas and concepts, even stretching our vocabularies as we look anew at some of our fields around the world, remembering that many of them have new names, remembering that our area secretaries come to tell us new stories of the progress of Southern Baptist. Truly, we are excited as we face this expanding ministry and as we look to our beloved Secretary of our Foreign Mission Board leading us in this program, along with his area secretaries whom he will present this morning. Truly, the countdown has begun. The challenge has been given to us of 5,000 missionaries. Roughly speaking, already in this countdown, we have 2,000. 3,000 to go. Dr. Baker James Coffin.
Madam President, Ms. Hunt, friends of Women's Missionary Union, first of all, may I say how grateful we are to come here today to this convention that is so deeply joined with us in a labor for Christ all around the world. Through the years which have gone by since the birth of the Foreign Mission Board in 1845 until this very moment, we have known that Baptist women have borne in their hearts a love for the cause of worldwide missions, and that unfailingly throughout the years you have held the ropes and you have reinforced those who, in response to God's call, have gone out across the world. The very first thing I want to do this morning is for me a very pleasant and joyful thing, to express appreciation of the recent Lottie Moon Christmas offering. And to share in the doing of that, I'm going to ask that all the missionaries who are present here this morning will stand and remain standing in these moments while I shall say a word about the Lottie Moon Christmas offering. Would you please stand? Would you mind please to turn around and face the audience? You may not be able to see them so well, but they in the light which is shining this way can see your faces. Women of Southern Baptist Life, standing before you this morning are representative missionaries of 2,000 who serve across the world. Standing here among them are those who are veterans of many years in many different lands. Some are now in emeritus years. Some have served during the hard years of bitter depression, when every month that passed by meant there was less and less with which to work, until we began to wonder what might be on tomorrow. But throughout all those years and through the years which have followed, Women's Missionary Union, through the Lottie Moon Christmas offering, has said to foreign mission labor and to missionaries all over the world, whatever comes, we are holding you up at the throne of grace in prayer. And this offering of love that flows out from our hearts is a tangible means of saying we care, and that we're going to suffer if need be, and march with you and conquer with you in the name of Jesus. I wonder if we ever will forget that back in that year of 1933, when we were in the very midnight of the Depression, and people were saying, 5 more years like this, and we will be out of the foreign mission business, that in that year, the Lottie Moon offering went over its goal. And there was a thrill that ran through the hearts of Southern Baptists as we began to say, surely something better is on the way. And although the amount of money in that year was so small in comparison to what now has come to be a great volume, the significance of it was beyond any power of measurement. Year by year, this offering has grown. Year by year, it has gone on. Until now, in the last Christmas offering, which just now we have come to announce its total, it has reached the perfectly marvelous sum of $11,870,649.35. If you can't remember that exact figure, just under $12 million, the largest cash offering for world missions ever laid upon the altar by any Christian body in all the world. Thanks be unto God. These missionaries who stand here with me this morning, representing 2,000 across the world, would say this offering translated into action means missionaries on the field. It means doctors and nurses busy in hospitals. It means teachers in the schoolroom. It means preachers in great cities and villages and back in the jungle areas. It means men and women for work at work for Jesus Christ all across the world. Thanks be unto God for what you've done. The Foreign Mission Board, at its last full meeting in May, by official action said, let us express to Women's Missionary Union our gratitude to them and to God for this wonderful offering which you've laid upon the altar. We thank you in Jesus' name. Thank you, missionaries. You'll be seated. When I speak of the Lottie Moon offering, I'm only speaking of a portion of what you mean. For one of the glories of the Lottie Moon offering is it walks hand in hand with a deep and abiding love that you've shown across the years for reinforcing all we do in world missions at home and abroad through your unceasing support and prayer for the cooperative program. In all Southern Baptist life, there is no force that reinforces the total labor that we do in our giving through the cooperative program more than this body. One of the glories of the Lottie Moon offering is that it walks hand in hand with the cooperative program and reinforces it so that the two become the very lifeline of all we do around the world. But when I speak of your reinforcement, I must speak not merely of your giving. I speak about the study of missions. For Baptist people will do as Baptist people know and as Baptist people feel moved in their hearts, and this is what you've done. It gives me joy to go across this convention and meet people who from their childhood have been in the processes of mission study, and how they say, we know about the missionaries and what they're doing and where they're working, and we pray for them. This grows out of your mission study and your unceasing prayer for missions. Of all the things you do, this must be your most significant, as before the throne of grace, you remember the labor of God's servants all around the world. What you do in the matter of the calling forth of God's servants, the laborers for the harvest. For the Master taught us clearly, pray the Lord of the harvest, that he thrust forth laborers into that harvest. It might surprise many of you if you could meet with us at the Foreign Mission Board when we appoint missionaries to hear how there runs a refrain through their testimonies. So many of them say, back yonder in Sunbeams, I began to be aware. Some of them say in GAs. Some of them say it was in YWA. Some of them say it was teaching a mission study course. Some of them say it was preaching during the week of prayer. Somehow it came to me. What you do as you labor in this task is much more extensive and much wiser than ever we can express. Thanks be unto God for you. I say it advisedly. If there were no Woman's Missionary Union, if there were no altars of prayer that you keep lighted, if there were no books open in mission study that you keep open, if there were no Lottie Moon Christmas offering that you keep alive and keep going, if there were not your constant reinforcement through the cooperative program, we would just simply see this morning the worldwide labor of Southern Baptists cut into small portions. And there would be a retrenchment to the ends of the earth that would sadden everybody who loves a great commission. But because this is so deeply embedded in your hearts, we who labor in this task go forward with a deep confidence that whether the days are fair and bright, or whether the days are stormy and dark, that Woman's Missionary Union is with us all the time in carrying to the ends of the earth the blessed tidings of great joy. This morning, you ought to hear the men of God who serve as the area secretaries. Who are these men? Ministers of Jesus Christ, by long years deeply committed to the task of world missions, long before the heavy responsibility of administrative leadership for vast areas came to their charge, so that they, by the deepest commitment inside, find themselves identified with what's going on in the greatest city or the smallest village, every church, every mission point, every institution around the world. They're going to come in a moment and tell us from their hearts what we need to hear. The first one is Dr. H. Cornell Garner, known and beloved to Southern Baptists for many years as a missions professor. Dr. Garner and I began as young missions professors at the same time. He in one seminary and I in another. God led me to the mission field as a missionary and on into the Foreign Mission Board's life. God led him for many years in his post of teaching, so around the world his students are laboring this day, until finally the mantle of leadership came to him for the vast area which then was known as Africa, Europe, and the Near East. Until the growth in that area made mandatory its dividing upon Dr. Garner's recommendation that it be divided, that he might be able to give his full concentration to the vast continent of Africa. And now he gives it his intensive concentration. It is my very great joy and honor to present to us this morning the Secretary for Work in Africa, Dr. Cornel Garner.
The Africa which the missionary of today confronts is not the Africa of David Livingston and Thomas J. Bowen. A new Africa has emerged with fresh challenges and startling opportunities. Instead of jungles and wild animals, we must picture Africa today in terms of booming industrial centers, growing cities with high-rise office buildings, air-conditioned department stores, miles of paved highways, speeding automobiles and trucks, and traffic jams at the rush hour. Instead of barefoot, illiterate Africans in rural villages, we must be prepared to face eager and determined young people with a thirst for more and more education and a resolution to make a place for themselves and their newly free nations among the self-respecting peoples of the earth. New conditions in the many former colonies which now are independent nations present baffling new problems but thrilling new opportunities. Most striking is the existence of vast new population centers, which have drawn together from the scattered rural villages thousands who are now readily accessible to the gospel and Christian influences. Whereas the task of the missionary once was to search out the people in scattered communities, he now finds that the people have come together, and in many growing unchurched areas are simply waiting to be reached with a dynamic message of redemption. In Zambia, the copper smelters have served like giant magnets, drawing men from the small farms to the mining townships where wages can be earned, which will bring within the reach of eager fingers the cheap transistor radios, fountain pens, and scores of other gadgets which have caught the fancy of the modern African. In Liberia, the richest iron deposits in the world have caused a super modern community to emerge where 3 years ago there was nothing but underbrush. In the Triangle area of Rhodesia, a new dam has created a water supply which in turn makes possible irrigation of a fertile lowland region where sugarcane is now growing in abundance and citrus trees are yielding a rich return to developers and providing labor for hundreds. In each of these countries, Southern Baptist missionaries have had the opportunity to found the first Christian church of any sort in several communities. In Zambia, the sound economy of the Copper Belt makes possible the rapid achievement of self-supporting churches. The Mount Nemba Baptist Church, dedicated in October 1964 at Yakepa, Liberia, ministers to an international community which serves well one of the most completely modern and automated mining operations in the world. The drawing together of people from many different localities often creates a language problem. Sometimes Africans in a given community speak several different dialects. In certain situations, this creates a fresh opportunity for the use of English in worship services. Many of the people study English, and most of the school children can understand it. It is often the only common language which can bind the group together in a worship service. Services at the Mount Nemba Church in Liberia are in English, with some translation into African dialects. English language services have recently been started in Accra, Ghana, and we have requests for English language pastors at Lagos and Enugu in Nigeria. In similar fashion, French serves as a lingua franca in the former French colonies and opens a wide door for witness to many different tribal groups. The phenomenal increase of schools in the new independent nations of Africa has created a vast field for literature and a demand for a sharp increase in Christian publications. Newly literate Africans are eager to read almost anything they can lay hands upon. The printed page has a certain fascination and bears a sense of authority. Christian literature needs to be produced not only in English, but in many African languages. The Baptist Press at Abadan, Nigeria, is seeking to increase its output with a new emphasis upon publications. A recently established publication center in Nairobi, Kenya, attempts to meet the need for literature throughout East Africa, while the publication center at Bulawayo, Rhodesia, serves Baptists of that country and Malawi. Only last year, a small publication center was established at Broken Hill, Zambia. The Ghana Press is temporarily inoperative because of the lack of a printer, and Liberia has yet to establish a Baptist press. The thirst for printed material has led several of our missions to establish bookshops and reading rooms. At Tanga and Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, a library and reading room are in constant use and provide an excellent point of contact for evangelism. The Baptist bookshop in Gwelo, Rhodesia, is proving increasingly popular and may soon be placed on a paying basis. A bookstall in the open market at Lilongwe, Malawi, has had a surprising output of gospels, pamphlets, and tracts. A bookshop has recently been established at Greenville, Liberia, and one is being planned for Lower Buchanan to be opened this year. The rapid development of radio and television in the new nations of Africa opens a wide avenue for Christian witness. Already, regular Baptist programs are scheduled in Nigeria and Zambia with plans for enlargement. A radio recording studio being constructed in Nairobi will make possible the production of high-quality programs for broadcast in East Africa. Greater freedom and more available time for religious broadcasts are found in the new republics than could be realized under colonial administration. Paralleling the emergence of new political states and the development of self-government under African leadership, Baptist conventions and associations are assuming a larger share of responsibility for the conduct of programs of evangelism and church development in these new nations. The Nigerian Baptist Convention, under an able African secretariat with a strong sense of responsibility and self-reliance, carries on its own program of home and foreign missions, as well as administering a vast system of Baptist elementary schools and assuming an increasing share of responsibility for higher education and medical work within Nigeria. Newly formed Baptist conventions in Ghana and Rhodesia are still experiencing growing pains, but their willingness to learn, even by making mistakes, offsets much of the immaturity. Missionaries are even more ready to transfer responsibility to qualified leaders than are the untried leaders ready to accept it. Work in East African countries is so new that a convention is not yet formed, but preliminary steps are being taken even now, looking toward the creation of a convention of African churches that can begin to accept its full responsibility for the expanding Baptist witness in Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania. Southern Baptists now have a mission program in 10 countries of Africa. 8 of these are newly independent nations, having gained their freedom since 1957. The latest field entered is the Republic of Togo, where on October 1st, 1964, a missionary couple took up residence. This is but the first of many former French colonies where the French language is the principal medium of communication, to which Southern Baptists should send workers in the near future. Even this month, the couple will begin language study in France with a view to assignment to the Ivory Coast Republic by this time next year. At its meeting last month, the board voted to send a couple to Southwest Africa to serve an English language congregation and explore possibilities of a wider ministry among people of that vast, barren region. A few unfortunate events, such as the recent Congo crisis, have caused some to feel that the day of opportunity in Africa is past and that the new independent nations are no longer open to the gospel. Nothing could be farther from the truth. The Congo disaster was an isolated event, and it should not condition our thinking about the continent of Africa as a whole. On recent trips throughout much of the continent, touching all of the countries in which we have work and other possible new fields, I was overwhelmed by the new doors of opportunity that confront us on all hands. Almost everywhere, the appeal was the same: send us more missionaries. New nations of Africa present new opportunities for witness and call for new methods of presenting in attractive form the old, old story of God's redeeming love.
God has a way of preparing men for tasks he wants done. Sometimes he seasons men through many experiences and steps of preparation.